Welcome to Everything EOS, born out of the EOS community for the EOS community. Join us as we dive into the ever-evolving world of Web3, explore the game-changing ideas and technologies that are powering the renaissance of GameFi, DeFi, DAOs, NFTs, and more on EOS. I'm your host, Brandon Lovejoy. My guest today is Daniel Keyes. Daniel is the CEO of EOS Nation, currently the number 6 ranked block producer on the EOS network. EOS Nation were co-authors on the API Plus blue paper. They helped lead the network coordination for Antelope Leap consensus upgrade. And if that's not enough, they're also creators of EOS Detective, the .gems NFT studio, and most relevant to today's discussion, Pomelo. And before we go any further, don't forget to like, subscribe, and comment on this video and let us know what you think. Help give a little nudge on the old YouTube algorithm. It helps our content reach a wider audience. Daniel, how are you doing today?
Hey, Brandon, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. It was an awesome intro. Appreciate the kind words there.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to throw in words like legendary and stuff, but I thought that'd be going a little too far.
That's all overboard. I think you get nailed it with yours there. Appreciate that.
Yeah. So, what are you sipping on there? I saw you had a cup in your hand.
Yeah, cheers. I got a fellow tea drinker, it looks like. Yeah, this is a afternoon now, so this is a green tea. Nice. I usually start with some coffee, move on to the green tea. After this, maybe I'll be sipping some mint. So we'll...
Smart.
I'm a big tea, warm drink kind of guy.
I'll drink to that.
And what you got there? I think that's a pretty cute little mug.
Yeah, actually, a friend of mine threw this. A little Pu'er. It's like an aged Chinese tea from Yunnan.
Nice.
Good stuff. Yep. Keeps me going. Let's see here. We've got a lot of great stuff to get into. For those that don't know much about what you do and Pomelo, let's start with that. What is Pomelo? And explain, maybe just dive right into quadratic funding for those people who aren't familiar.
Yeah, happy to. So yeah, Pomelo is a crowdfunding platform for the EOS and Antelope community. The unique part about it is that it leverages, as you mentioned, quadratic funding, which is something that got a lot of inspiration from the Ethereum community as a similar quadratic funding platform called Gitcoin. So if you're familiar with Gitcoin and you know how that works, then you've got a pretty good idea of how Pomelo works. And what the idea with quadratic funding is that it's a democratic way of distributing public funds. And in the case of Pomelo and Gitcoin, specifically towards public goods. And the reason we use quadratic funding as a democratic method of distributing funds is because it prioritizes in a big way the kind of wisdom of the crowd rather than, for example, the whales. So it's a matching formula. And the way that it works is anybody can make a donation to the grants that they want to support. And there's a large matching pool that's provided by the EOS Network Foundation, and we match every donation leveraging this quadratic formula. But rather than matching one-to-one in a way that would, you know, benefit whales who are making large donations, it matches with this quadratic formula that factors in both the number of donors that donated to that grant as well as the size of the donations in a way where there's sort of diminishing returns for the larger the donation is, and a big amplification for those grants that have wide support for many individuals. So this, you know, ends up creating a strong signal of widespread community support for a project and matches accordingly. And yeah, the other factor there that I'll mention is that it's got to be a public good. So that's basically something that's anyone can use access for free. and can't be prevented from accessing, no matter how many people are accessing it. So it's both non-rivalrous and non-exclusive. So non-exclusive, free to use, non-rivalrous. There's no limit to how many people can access it for free.
Have there been a lot of, I know the concept of public goods isn't, you know, native to a lot of people necessarily. I mean, we all use public goods, whether we realize it or not, in most societies today. But have there been any cases where you were a little uncertain as to whether something was a public good, or like, has it been pretty clear?
100%. No, it's getting more and more clear over time. But you know, the concept of public goods was new to us as much as it's new to the community when we first launched Pomelo. Now we're in our second year, so we're at season 5 now. We've ran 4 seasons. The way that Pomelo works, for those not familiar, it's a quarterly matching round. So every quarter there's a new round that people can participate in. And you know, going back to season 1, the community was still figuring out what a public good was, and so was the Pomelo team. And we've sort of been refining our understanding of a public good over time, because it's not always clear cut. Sometimes there's some kind of these gray areas where is it, does that count? Maybe, depends. And we've gotten better at kind of recognizing those, you know, those cases where it's a maybe, but not quite. And we've gotten better at how we communicate those with the people submitting the grants and educating them through the process. And as a result, we're seeing over time, the quality of the grants is getting better every season. It's getting easier for us to review them, not just because we've gotten better at identifying, but because the community has gotten better at crafting their grant proposals in a way that makes it easier for us to determine that yes or no, this is a public good.
Awesome. Yeah, it's been really cool to see the progression from season to season. With all the advancements you all have been making, it's quite impressive. So you've talked a little bit about public goods. Why are they important, and how do they add value to EOS specifically?
Yeah, so I would say public goods are critical for any community to thrive and to prosper. Public goods are those key, often, you know, almost infrastructure type elements that everybody needs to be able to interact in a community, but don't want to pay for. Or don't, you know, it's the things that people expect to be able to access for free, oftentimes. And as a result, because the nature is that you expect to access them for free, there's oftentimes not a business model for how do we fund this thing. So public goods are something that, again, like you mentioned, we interact with every day without even thinking about it. Things like in the regular meat space Web 2 world, you know, the roads that we use to get from point A to point B, you know, in the infrastructure that provides us running water, things that also, you know, that would normally be paid for with taxes, because they're not things that people typically want to pay for themselves. But without a road, it's very hard for society to function. And we were seeing that in a US community, you know, prior to Pomelo, prior to ENS coming along, and you know, not just through Pomelo, but you know, through direct grants and things like that, funding the public goods. We were seeing that it wasn't happening. There was, you know, a number of years, you know, dark days, where, you know, we had this great underlying infrastructure, EOSIO, and now Antelope. That core tech was awesome, but the infrastructure around it just didn't exist. You know, things like wallets, SDKs, APIs, things that you need to be able to build an application and sustain a community, they just weren't getting built. And so it made, you know, as a developer trying to build in this ecosystem, it meant if you wanted to build on EOS, you had to build these things yourself, which is a lot of work, a lot of cost. And what ended up happening was, screw it, I'll just go build somewhere else where they're taking care of these key infrastructure pieces. So we were seeing, you know, developers leaving, building elsewhere, and the community, yeah, suffering as a result. And since Pomelo was released, since the ENS started tackling some of those key pieces directly, it's like night and day, and the developers are returning. There's a thriving ecosystem of people collaborating, you know, building, creating these core building blocks that they can leverage each other's pieces and build on top of each other. And so now it's getting easier to build on because there's a whole shelf of public good building blocks you can pick from. And we're seeing, you know, development accelerate. And every season, like I said, it's not just the ease of approving an application that's getting easier, that's getting better. It's the pace of innovation in the grants that we're seeing, because there's this whole set of things that developers can work with instead of building from the ground up, from scratch. They can leverage these existing building blocks and build on top of them.
Yeah, and it's been interesting to see as well how Pomelo functions as a bit of a reputation system within the community, within the larger public goods framework that has been established by the ENF and on EOS with the direct grant framework. For instance, I believe any grant over 10K in the grant framework requires that you be a previous Pomelo participant. So it's a good way for people that are seeking larger funding for their project to kind of get their feet wet and get to know the community and build a reputation. We've seen that, and I believe Facing's just received their second grant through the framework, and they've been kind of working their way through. And again, the grant framework is a milestone-based system, so you know, you have to meet milestones to receive funding. So everything is kind of building up from, yeah, you could start at the smallest scale possible with Pomelo and get to know everybody. And Pomelo has a pretty sophisticated method for, yeah, maybe talk a little bit about that too. I don't know.
Yeah, I want to say the reputation system goes kind of both ways too. There's benefits in two directions with this reputation system. So there's a very obvious benefit for the grant owners, and in particular, grant owners who don't have a reputation established. You know, maybe they're new to the community, maybe they've got a strong idea or a strong skill set and a strong team, but they've, you know, the community has never heard of them before, and it's very difficult to gain trust to build the thing. You know, if you want to seek funding for, you know, from the grant framework, for example, how do you establish the trust that you will deliver what you promise you will, and you've got the skills to do it without having some way to prove yourself? And Pomelo is sort of that stepping stone for, especially for unknown new people who haven't already proven themselves, to define a very small scope, raise a small amount of money in a season, and, you know, build your MVP and come back each season and keep building on it and growing that reputation. At the same time, that reputation signal is important for the community. We're not only identifying who are the trustworthy people, we're also identifying who are the not trustworthy, you know, actors in the ecosystem. And, you know, the community can do with that information, you know, what, you know, decide whether this is a team, for example, they want to continue doing business with, or maybe not offer them a grant. it's just as important to have that negative signal as it is to have that positive signal. So the community, and yeah, obvious benefits of MLMs is, an opportunity for some money. So you can feed your, that's kind of like the obvious ones. And there's all these intangible benefits to, I kind of highlighted a little bit this culture that it creates in the ecosystem. So, before Pomelo was a thing, people were building in silos. They weren't open sourcing work. They weren't collaborating. And with this, now there's an incentive for people to work more collaboratively and, again, learn about what is a public good and why they're valuable and experience firsthand how valuable they are, because now you're participating and you're leveraging some of these building blocks. You're like, oh, wow, I'm starting to get why building open source software is so key and why it's great and people are doing it more. We've kind of turned from this silo competitive culture to building in the open, collaborating, building on each other's work. So it's kind of created this more welcoming collaborative culture for the whole ecosystem, and a point for people to gather every quarter. Instead of having this kind of radio silence, no one knows what each other is working on. It's a place to come and see what people are working on and opportunities for people to that's a kind of cool thing. How can I help? And get involved in some of these projects too. So we've seen that quite a bit. Projects that no one had heard of coming to Pomelo and establishing something that's now actually kind of a key part of the ecosystem, and and growing their team because they've found people in the community that are interested in helping. So that's things that are less obvious as benefits of Pomelo, but I think also, I would say just as valuable, if not more valuable than, now there's some money for people to build things.
Yeah, it's the 1+1=3 kind of effect of just the sum of all these different collaborative opportunities, I think, that exist in the space when you open things up like that. And we just wrote a piece on the value of open source and transparency and published that on the blog at the ENF. And now that you bring up open source and that we touch on free software as well, do you want to say anything more about that? I'm curious, like, your history, and maybe, like, I feel like that's a whole other world that maybe, Pomelo and the grant framework kind of gateway people into if they're not already familiar. The open source world obviously is ancient as far as the internet is concerned. And
yeah,
it really laid the groundwork for the kind of collaborative open tools that we're able to leverage today. I don't know what your thoughts are on all that and how it pertains to, blockchain and EOS and everything we're doing here.
Yeah, 100%. So, the challenge though with open source is, and I sort of touched on that, is this concept of this free rider problem where, okay, why would anyone pay for this thing if it's free and open source? Why wouldn't they just take it and run with it? And again, makes it the challenge with things open source or any public goods is how do I pay to build this thing? Because no one wants to pay for it. So I know it's a bit of this, open source is great, but a lot of people shy away from it because of why would I subject myself to being poor and not having a way to pay for this thing? I would rather turn it and make it closed source so that I can profit off of it. But when we have these types of systems like the grant framework and Pomelo, that's sort of what we're trying to solve. And it sort of at least dampens, if not removes, that downside of open source, so you can just get all the benefit.
Yeah, and we've seen some hybrid approaches too as well. I know some projects will release an open source component that they're going to build a proprietary thing on top of, but the underlying framework is open source. So that's kind of an interesting way to have your cake and eat it too in that scheme of things.
Yeah, we got a lot of project participants. It's a private app, for example. It's got fees to use it. but maybe there's some, and so that there's, you know, that's one way to feed yourself is you have a real business that charges fees to use it, and you're earning revenue that way. But maybe there are some core components within this application that are, you know, if not already, they could be made general purpose, open source. You know, maybe you've got a smart contract, for example, that could be made into a general purpose that other use cases could also benefit from. And you create a Pomelo grant just for that. And that's a good opportunity for you as a business that's, you know, perhaps on the way to achieving revenue because you have this business plan that's still working on getting users. You can kind of help bootstrap that and start getting, building a community around your idea through Pomelo by, you know, identifying those little building blocks that could be made open source, funding those, and that maybe is a good percentage of your development costs already. And you're able to continue on your path to building that actual, you know, revenue generating business, leveraging those building blocks.
Yeah, really cool. I love to see these tools for collaboration and people figuring out different ways that they can, yeah, like you said, funding. You're like, oh, I can fund that because I can use it later in some product that I'm working on. And we're all building up this underlying infrastructure of tools that we need to develop more effectively on EOS. All right, so by the time this podcast airs, will be the very tail end of season 5. So people still have time to get their donations in if they haven't already, contribute on Pomelo. I understand that you've introduced some new rules and features for season 5. Maybe you could get into a little bit of the story there about what they are and how that came about, why they were implemented, some stuff around self-donations and some other items.
Yeah, so the short answer there is the new rule is we clarified that it's always been against the rules for you to donate to your own grant. And we've now in season 5 clarified that also applies to team members of the grant. And this is something that's, and you know, rooted in the fact that, again, what Pomelo aims to be is a way to distribute funds based on the sort of democratic consensus of the community as a whole. We don't want that signal being tarnished or impacted by the team itself, you know, donating to their own grant just because they want to get money. Kind of human nature makes sense. You'd, you know, I got a grant here. Let's try to maximize how much matching I can get by having my whole team donate to it. But that doesn't mean that's something the community wants to see funded. So to help prevent that, we've expanded the rules to include team members. And it's something that's, you know, we've seen from season 1, you know, feedback from the community that's caused some confusion. When you say, you know, in the rules, you can't donate to your own grant, many grant donors already assumed that that applied to team members. Others did not. And so we were in this sort of scenario where some teams were playing with a bit of an advantage because they were, you know, strictly only defining themselves as literally the person who created the grant, where other teams were playing a little more conservatively and asking their entire teams not to donate, which resulted in a bit of an unfair playing field. And so we, you know, over a few seasons monitored what kind of behavior was what we were seeing on donations to some grants. We did see that there were some cases where, you know, certain grants got a pretty high boost in their matching because of this team donation pattern. We proposed this change to the community in season 4 in an article we released. And along that with that, we sent out a survey with some, here's what we're thinking. What do you guys think? Should we allow team members to donate? Should we not? If we do, if we don't, how can we prevent it? And based on the feedback, what we landed on was, yes, clarify team member or an individual who created the grant cannot donate to the grant. we recognize that, you know, accidents happen. And sometimes, you know, it's hard to, especially when you have the larger your team is, harder to control where, you know, maybe they're out there donating, maybe they're not aware of the rules. So we don't intend to disqualify grants if we find that a team member has donated. But if we do find evidence that a donation was made by a team member, in our post-season analysis, we just will not match those donations. If we find that there was, you know, excessive collusion and knowingly teams kind of getting around this rule to try to manipulate the system, they could be disqualified in that case. But we're going to, you know, try to leave some room for, you know, mistakes happen. And we'll, it will be a case by case basis. And heavily, you know, that question is, okay, how do we know if someone's a team member? One way is you can list the team member on your grant application, and we'll make your life easier if you do that. And actually, the UI will prevent those team members that you've listed on your grant application from donating, so you're not at risk of accidentally breaking the rules. But we also recognize that not all grants will list all other team members on the grant. So we're going to, in those cases, rely on hopefully those teams, you know, just following the rules and not donating. But at the same time, and this is something we've been seeing more and more of each season, the community kind of helping us self-police the rules. There's ways that within Pomelo you can report when you find that there are cases of people breaking the rules. In season four, we did a little bit of this, and in season four, we did even more of it, offering incentives for those who provide us evidence that leads to us taking action on a grant. Something that we saw was very effective in season four, and we want to, and we sort of did it just as a pilot, very limited scenarios, and it resulted in us finding cases of quid pro quo. That's where somebody pays somebody else to donate to their own grant. That's against the rules. We disqualified two grants that were found clear evidence that they were paying people to donate to the grant, thanks to somebody responding to a bounty offer that we sent out through an email to the donors of those grants. So in season five, we're going to start offering more broadly this opportunity to claim bounties for offering information. And maybe we're going to need some help from the community to identify these cases where a team has team members donating and they haven't listed them as team members on the grant. But we're a pretty tight-knit community here, and oftentimes we get folks noticing that and letting us know.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot to think about here, but apart from the obvious incentive of just being a good actor in Pomelo and receiving your reward for, you know, doing the work and getting support from the community, have you thought about, or are there any attempts to kind of like create some micro incentives around the good behavior that you want to see? I mean, apart from just, you know, as far as like listing team members, for instance, like it would seem, you know, you could get little
right
benefits from like listing team members and kind of doing that work for Pomelo essentially, instead of you all having to like sleuth around. And
100%. Yeah. So it's something we're constantly thinking about how we can. So the long-term goal of Pomelo is we want more and more of the community involved in and sort of self-governing Pomelo. And there are lots of different things, you know, to run a Pomelo season. You know, we need to review the grant applications. We need to approve, set the rules. We need to enforce the rules. We need to carry out an analysis and, figure out who's breaking the rules. And these are all things that over time we want more and more involved the community with incentives.
Cool.
And to your point, Anna, how can we reward good actors. Again, it's something that we're experimenting with slowly, piece by piece. And, you know, the first step is with this, you know, it's an easy one, you know, report something, we take action. That's an easy objective thing we can reward something with. The other thing we've been encouraging is, and something that the community has been asking for, is, you know, how can we hold grants accountable for delivering what they promised they would be delivering? And we've seen in season four, the EOS support team put out their audit report, and now they've got a grant in season five, their EOS audit grant, to fund this kind of, you know, a seasonal report that would be put out that has, you know, real people that aren't the Pomelo team. It's a third party that actually kind of does a bit of a check on, hey, these people said they were going to do this season. They said it was going to be open source, and was it though?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get hundreds of applications or even grants approved every season. So it's a big burden to expect every donor to go through every grant and do that sort of analysis. Yes, they've got an open source. The code actually works. They're doing what they said they're doing. So this, having the community put that effort in and put together a report on, here's what we found when we did the research, is going to, I think, be super valuable for donors and something that they've been asking for. And then with our new collections feature, I think that goes kind of hand in hand with that. That was a feature that we released in season four.
Mm-hmm.
That lets the community sort of curate, rather than just donating to the grants that you want to see succeed, create a basket of grants that you want to advertise to the rest of the Pomelo community that you think these are the grants that everyone should donate to.
Cool.
And we're seeing how the EOS audit team has their EOS audit, their collection of grants that they've audited and believe have been, you know, doing what they've promised. And we'd love to see more and more of that. You know, the idea is, you know, this is sort of this way of decentralizing the wisdom of the crowd. How can we give the community the tools to identify and report on what are the grants worth donating to? So the more teams that we have, the more people we have creating collections, and maybe they're creating collections in their various niches. You know, maybe you're a very technical person who knows how to check that the quality of the code is good and worth funding. Or maybe you're more of a content kind of person that you can put together your collection of the best news grants. And then now as a donor, rather than having to read through a few hundred grants and picking up the ones you want, you could, and then again, another opportunity to grow your reputation as a curator. Maybe you're not someone who wants to build something, but you want to grow a reputation as someone who's good at identifying and reviewing good quality grants. Yeah, you put together your collection, and those that have high reputation, people will donate to those instead of having to weed through all the grants themselves.
I feel like immediately where my mind went to was sort of like the Hive style curation reward that we've seen, you know,
mm-hmm.
work on that platform. And it's like, oh, and I hadn't considered the possibility, not that you are doing that currently, I don't believe, but of even
but we are thinking about it. Yeah,
it's interesting. And I understand that in season four you also added a way for projects to give progress updates within their
project application. That might have been pre-season four, but it was definitely not there from the beginning. It was maybe season three or season four. I'm lost track now, but
yeah.
It's yeah, so that's a key thing. And again, we hear from a lot of our donors feedback that we have a large set of donors who only like to donate to grants they've donated to or that had participated in more than one season and have demonstrated that they're actually making progress and delivering what they promised. So we added a way to easily for the grant owner to to prompt them, the grant owners, when they do return, hey, make sure you give this update on, you know, what did you, of the things you promised from last season, what did you deliver?
Right.
What are the things you've delivered since last season? So that this new field on the grant application both prompts, make sure we get that input from the grant donor, and it makes it easier for the donors to find it. Because, you know, before we had that, it was, you know, pretty frequently we would have grant donors providing that update, but not in a consistent way. Do they put it at the top of the application? Do they put it at the bottom, somewhere buried in the middle? Some people have very long grant descriptions, and you know, people don't want to necessarily have to read through every single long description. So now you've got to, if that's all you care about, you just go look there and make your donation decision easier. Mm-hmm. However, it's completely self-reported. So again, that's where that feedback from the community is like, okay, how do we actually make sure that what people are writing there is true? And that's where we really rely on the community to help identify the cases where they are and where they're not. And over time, we want to improve that more. You know, it would be, you know, one of our top requested features that we're not going to have that in season 5, probably not in season 6 either. Maybe the following season is the ability to rate grants and their updates.
Mm.
You know, right now, the only way to rate a grant is in a positive way by donating to them. But there's no real way to give your, you know, negative feedback on, for example, hey, this person's lying. They're not doing what they said they're doing.
Right.
You know, their last season update is completely fabricated. There's no, you know, there's, the only way you can signal that is by not donating to them, which is not a very strong signal. So that's something that is high on our roadmap for things we want to be able to offer the community, and that way to provide feedback on things like that last season update.
Cool. Yeah, you kind of get into, I don't know, it makes me think of some Web 2 apps, like where people are reviewing businesses and stuff, and they can leave comments, and then business owner can reply and be like, thank you for your feedback, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Or if they don't reply,
or like Airbnb, we've been taking a lot of inspiration from that. And like, we're, the other thing we've been working a lot on is bounties. We can talk a little more about that later. Mm-hmm. So this review system, where this is going to be just as important for bounties as it is for grants. And it's, how can you rate your experience with the person that you've interacted with?
Yeah.
And just like when you stay at an Airbnb or with an Uber, the driver can rate the rider and the rider can rate the driver.
Totally.
We want to, and there's a star rating and you can leave some comments, and that's a big part of the reputation, the value of things like Uber and Airbnb. You know, that's sort of what helps make them safe, is that you avoid interacting with the ones that have crappy reputations, and you only take a ride with the Uber cars that, you know, are over X number stars.
Right. Yeah, maximizing the ability to trust from bidirectionally from both sides. So that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, you mentioned bounties, and it was kind of next on the list. So what stage are you at with the development of the bounty program?
Yeah. And maybe I can even give a little, I'm not sure if everyone knows what bounties even are.
I guess I shouldn't just launch into it. Yeah, please.
Yeah, so bounties, so we talk about grants. Bounties are sort of like the inverse. It's very, a lot of synergy with a bounty and a grant. A bounty is a way for anybody to post up a task, fund it, and ask somebody to complete that task and pay them for it. And the reason it's very synergistic with grants is you got all these grant owners creating grants, making promises that I have this, and maybe some of them just start as an idea. So I've got this great idea of this thing we should build for the US community that's a public good, and successfully have raised some funds, and now they got to build it.
Mm.
Maybe they don't have all of the skills themselves to put all the pieces together, but they have a budget. So now they can break up their project into little tasks, post them up on our bounties board, put up the funds they've raised through Pomelo as a reward for people to complete these bounties. And now anybody who wants to earn a little bit of money, have some skills, again, another way to earn some reputation, make a little money, crush a few little bounties, start building up that reputation, get a little money. And then as a result, the work that needs to get done is getting done. New people are building reputations. Maybe some of those bounty hunters turn into grant owners, and kind of this kind of virtuous cycle. And we're keeping the EOS token in like it's sort of this circular economy. Rather than having to sell my EOS to pay my developers in dollars, maybe there are, you know, we have this captive community of people that are, they have talent, they have skills, and they love EOS. They're willing to do work for EOS. So why not, you know, connect the people who need work done with the people willing to do work for EOS? And that way, now instead of having to sell your EOS to pay your developers, you just, you know, put up some bounties and you get those that are willing to accept EOS doing that work.
That makes a lot of sense. Very beneficial to keep that circular economy going and build that up. So do bounties have a component where, I mean, are they exclusively funded then by the grant owner, or is there a way for bounties to even be opened up to like a wider funding mechanism?
Yeah, anybody can. So you don't have to be a grant owner to create a bounty. That was just kind of one example of how the, so yeah, anybody can create a bounty, but you're right, they're 100% funded by the bounty funder. So there's no matching aspect to this. None of the, you know, the quadratic formula doesn't come into account in the bounty side of things. It's, you know, literally, you know, I've got some work. Here's what I'm willing to pay for it. And now, you know, it's posted up on our board. Now anybody can see it and apply to do that work. As a funder, now you can approve the hunter that you again, there's a reputation element there. Approve the hunter that you believe is most capable of delivering the work. The funds are in our smart contract. So you know, you deposit, you know, you write up your grant proposal or your bounty proposal, deposit your EOS. It's posted up on chain now in the UI. Anyone can apply once they've been approved to start the work. Basically, they're guaranteed that those funds will be released to them. There is a bit of an opportunity for the grant or for the bounty funder to give feedback. So, you know, I complete my work, I submit it, I say I'm done. The funder has the opportunity to review the work and say, nope, go back to the drawing board before the funds are released. But there's not a, there's no opportunity for a funder to rug pull anybody, because once it's already in that smart contract in escrow with us and work has begun, you can't cancel it and take the funds back. It's going to go to the, it's going to go to the hunter. The worst you can do as a funder is sort of delay the release of those funds with, through some, hey, no, you're not done, kind of back to the drawing board, back and forth process. So it's a lot like Fiverr. So currently there is no dispute resolution, something that perhaps we would offer in the future. So that's why, you know, reputation portion is important.
If somebody says like, that's not the scope of work we agreed to, and the other person is like, yeah, we did, and you know, XYZ, and they just mutually both disagree on things, and is there like a way for them to like part ways amicably back out of it?
Yeah. So the hunter would have to basically withdraw. You know, the person who agreed to do the work, you know, maybe they, you know, this funder keeps sending it back to me and not releasing the funds. By the way, the funds get automatically released after 72 hours if the funder does not indicate nope. So there's a bit of like a failsafe trigger to not get it locked in there when never released.
Sure.
But the dispute resolution is, you know, between the funder and the hunter, either the funder eventually accepts, okay, it's good enough, I'm going to stop sending it back to work.
Mm-hmm.
Or they just give up because, you know, 72 hours elapses and it gets released. Or the, like I said, the hunter can amicably withdraw. Sorry, we haven't agreed. I don't agree to fulfill the what you want. I'm just going to step out. And then that rating aspect is going to be important there in those cases where
they can each read.
There wasn't an amicable. They can, yeah, well, it's, you know. So the funder was unreasonable with the requirements and never wanted to release the funds, or vice versa. The quality of the work was crap.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there'll be that opportunity.
And it would.
And there's a couple of different ways of doing it too. So they, as a funder, you have the opportunity to clarify the scope of your bounty. And sort of what I just described here is sort of you approve an applicant before they've done the work based on the reputation of that applicant and trusting that, okay, I haven't seen the deliverable. I'm going to trust that they're going to deliver it. And once they finish it, I'll release the funds. Sometimes, you know, especially if you're a funder with already a strong reputation and you're not worried about someone, you know, being worried that they're not going to pay me if I do the work, that you could scope your bounties as do not apply unless you finish the work already. I want to, like, in your application that you submit to me, I want to see the work already done, and then I'll accept the person who did the best work. And then so that removes the risk on the funder. They're only going to approve somebody who satisfied the requirements, but now it puts the risk on the hunter because now you have to assume that the funder is going to pick me, and there may be some duplication. Now maybe five different people at the same time are all working on it.
Yeah.
And only one of them is going to get the money. So depending on the scenario, maybe one option is better than the other, but they're both viable options for funders.
And so the scope of work that's defined by the funder then does that live on chain? Is that somewhere that, I mean, it would seem like that would remove a lot of potential for dispute if it was just like, well, that's, everyone can see exactly.
Yeah, even if it's on chain, there's always like interpretation is, you know, we're all humans. Mm. Things can be interpreted differently. The way that it works is it's a pretty simple system. So you have to have a GitHub issue. So it all starts with a public GitHub issue. So when I create my bounty, the first field on my form is what's your GitHub issue? Give it a title and a short description, put some tags like what are the skills I need, what is the language that I communicate in, kind of little things to help people be able to filter, what's the reward.
Gotcha.
So the source of truth really at the end is that GitHub issue.
Gotcha.
And people also can now kind of take their kind of clarifying of the scope off of the bounty platform and into that GitHub issue, having a back and forth. So there's a good opportunity there to, hey, if the scope is unclear, use the comments of that GitHub issue to clarify it with the person who created the issue, and then you can tailor your application to that. Or you could have that conversation after you've already been approved. It's very flexible in that way.
Yeah. Cool. Excited to see that come around when y'all finish putting.
Well, I didn't answer your question about what's the stage that we're in. So that's what bounties is. We're very close. So we're in the kind of polishing phase now. our team, we've got the whole Bounty platform running in our developer environment right now. It, you know, the end-to-end experience works. You know, the first basic set of features. One thing that it doesn't have yet is that review. There's no rating system built in yet, and we will likely launch the first version without it, just so we can get it into the hands of people sooner rather than later. And that rating system is actually a pretty complicated tech build to design and build all the back and forth ratings, commenting. How do we rank the ratings? You know, which ones do we fill at the top? There's kind of a lot of thought and work that needs to go into that. So we'll start without it. But so everything up until that point is done. We're working on just now polishing and operationalizing, you know, putting together FAQs and wikis and writing some articles and just wrapping up the loose ends before we start inviting the community to start creating bounties. So it's just around the corner.
Cool. Exciting to hear.
Yeah.
Okay, well, and completely other, there's no good segue to this, but I'm just going to make the segue out of nothing. So here we go. From bounties. So what do you have to say about alternative currencies ever being added to Pomelo? I know now with better access to USDT through Binance and seeing some of the interesting things that are happening with IBC, how does that play into Pomelo and what do you see for the future there?
Yeah, so we've always from the start designed and planned for the ability to expand the options of different tokens that we can leverage as a medium of donation. So currently, EOS is the only token that you can make donations or have a matching pool in on Pomelo. USDT is an easy one to add. And we're already, the way that our matching pool, the matching allocation is calculated, we specifically did it this way for this eventuality. We match on a dollar value at the time of your donation. Because we anticipated eventually we're going to have more than EOS as an option of the token. So we need a one kind of measuring stick for all donations. So we use USD value as at the time of the donation, and we match it on that. So adding USDT, that's an easy one. It's the same value. We'll match it at the USD value. There are other, you know, within the EOS ecosystem tokens that perhaps will be good candidates. Maybe one day we'll offer DeFi box tokens as a medium of donation. And then now with IBC, we're seeing tokens from even other Antelope chains getting wrapped on EOS. And that, you know, why not to offer, you know, UX tokens or Talos tokens as an option now that we have some liquidity on EOS thanks to IBC for those tokens, which has opened up a new opportunity. You know, now that we have IBC and this ability to offer tokens, we're already planning for season 6 starting. So that's next season, 3 months away. It's not just tokens, but it's also not just donations that benefit from IBC. We can also have matching pools that are denominated in various different tokens. And we already have a lot of interest from potential new matching partners that previously were kind of not interested in joining as a matching partner in Pomelo because they have a token on another Antelope chain. And the opportunity is only valuable to them if they can use their own token as the mean of reward. So now suddenly with IBC, we've seen this rush of interest from a number of projects in the Antelope ecosystem who would like to become matching partners. And it's looking very likely that in season 6, we're going to see our first Pomelo season where we have new matching partners besides the ENF with their own specific side pool in their own token with perhaps some of their own conditions. So, you know, right now it's, you know, it's got to be a public good that benefits Antelope ecosystem. We could have a, you know, no promises, for example, that on any particular, you know, but maybe we have an IBC pool that's for IBC projects that's funded with a UX token.
Mm-hmm.
Hypothetical scenario there. And what that does is, and again, I talked about some of the benefits of Pomelo to the EOS ecosystem at the beginning. We're seeing the, you know, EOS isn't the only ecosystem that wants to see realize these benefits. And we're seeing a lot of interest from some of these potential matching partners we're talking about. Like, wow, I've got this treasury of tokens, and but I don't have the mechanism to distribute them in a way that can create this environment that we're seeing being created in the Pomelo community. We want that too. And now suddenly with IBC and this potential for side pools, that's an option.
Very cool. Very cool. That's some great alpha right there. You heard it here first.
Yeah.
Very exciting. Yeah. My brain is in a little bit of a confusing state right now. I'm trying to imagine how all these different tokens kind of like unwind for the recipient, or you know, could you elect to in this theoretical scenario, could you elect to receive, say it's funded through a UX token, but you want to receive it in EOS, or vice versa? Is that something, I mean, how does that all occur in your mind?
So as a grant owner or potential grant owner, you'll have the choice, which pool do you want to participate in? Do I want to just join the general EOS main pool, which is an EOS matching pool? I'm going to receive my matching is going to be in EOS tokens.
I see.
Maybe you see an opportunity to, and so yeah, the pools are all very separated. They all, you know, they run all at the same time. Mm-hmm. All the grants will appear in one UI alongside each other, but you know, they're matched within themselves. So, you know, only the people participating in the IBC pool are going to be receiving rewards from that IBC pool. And that 100% of the matching rewards they receive will be in the token of that pool. However, the donations, there's flexibility there. Again, we're going to be, you know, as a grant owner participating in, let's say, the UX IBC pool, you can receive donations in any of the supported tokens. So when somebody donates to your project, they could donate in EOS, and you receive that EOS immediately upon the donation. And then at the end of the season, we do our analysis, and then we distribute the matching pool, and it would be distributed. There's no option there to choose to take it in a different token. You would receive it in the token of the pool.
Gotcha. Then it'd just be on the recipient to do with it as they see fit.
That's right.
Very cool.
Maybe they create some bounties with it. Maybe they want to sell it. It would be up to the recipient to determine what they want. And there's also going to be some flexibility on, you know, which currencies do I want to accept as a donations. So maybe you've got a grant in the UX pool, but you only want to accept EOS as your donations. I expect it's probably not the best strategy.
Yeah.
If you want to, because something we didn't really talk about in terms of like the power of quadratic funding is the project participating in Pomelo, generally speaking, the overwhelming majority of the funds they receive are from the match they receive. It's not from their donations, because like you can get some you know, the grants that succeed in getting widespread support. A one EOS donation can get matched sometimes up to 1,000x, 100x, depends on like a huge amount. So if you want to maximize the match that you receive, you should accept donations in whatever form they may come. Because really those, you can almost count those as just votes. You know, it's nice, cool, I'm getting a little bit of funds as a donation, but what you're really after is that match. So the broader you can appeal your grant, the audience to your grant to, the more it'll get matched.
Yeah, it really changes the whole landscape, doesn't it? Because it almost incentivizes more core, like antelope applicable across all chains sort of applications to be built, or at least the underlying infrastructure for those applications potentially, because you'd appeal to a wider set as opposed to just, you know, developing a very specific for a very specific chain. Not that you couldn't do that if there's enough support behind that, and the pools of course are denominated separately. So, but it feels like it incentivizes kind of more of this, you know, with IBC coming online. It's kind of, I think myself and I think a lot of other people have this feeling like we're creating a more of like a super organism of blockchains. And this kind of has that feeling like, oh, this opens up a wider range of collaboration across chains that we've never seen before.
100%. So, and I think, so this is kind of, I talked earlier about how launching Pomelo, we saw it create this new collaborative atmosphere within EOS. Now with IBC and side pools, hopefully what we'll see is that extend across. Now we've created an environment of collaboration across all of the Antelope ecosystem. And, you know, rather than people just competing and saving everything for their own chain, now we've got projects, again, leveraging the building blocks from each other, and everybody, all the Antelope chains are benefiting. And it's better for, you know, that I think there's some people might be like, oh, why are we now having, you know, these other side chains coming and joining? All I care about is EOS, but it's creating more opportunities for everybody. Again, having those building blocks now that you can work off, and because Antelope is a common among all these chains, you know, if you're building open source software for EOS, it's just oftentimes just as valuable for Telos and vice versa.
For sure.
So again, adding to this shelf of building blocks, and also as a developer or someone who's trying to earn some money to build stuff, expanding the opportunities you have to do that. I expect what we're going to see is like a bit of arbitrage between these different pools. You know, maybe you're someone who previously would have only participated in the EOS main pool, but you see that there's less competition in this UX pool, for example. The smaller set of people participating, less competition, more opportunity for me to get a larger share of the pool. So we'll likely see, okay, I wasn't able to get that much in this main pool because it's just the competition is too hot. Let me play in this smaller, less competitive pool and build my reputation there, and then maybe I can hop around UGCs and try, you know. So it's I think it's gonna be good for everybody.
Definitely, yeah. It seems like it opens up a whole panoply of different opportunities. So I'm excited to see how that plays out. I know we're just past the hour here, so I wanna be cognizant of our time a little bit. I don't know if you have a hard stop, but there's a few other topics I'd like to get to if you can stick around a little bit longer.
I'm still good. I don't have any hard stops, so we can stick around a little longer.
Cool. So that was really awesome to hear about. I'm super stoked about all the IBC avenues that opens up. I do want to talk a little bit about all the cool NFT and gamification stuff that y'all have been doing with Pomelo. And maybe there's even avenues where that gets multi-chain and really weird too that I haven't yet to consider. But yeah, what are y'all doing there? And what are you excited about in that front?
Yeah, so the NFT series is something that we've been doing from the beginning leading up to a Pomelo season, get some engagement from the community, because there's, you know, there's periods between season where there's nothing happening on Pomelo because we're, you know, in between seasons. So what can the community do in the middle? We've kind of created this fun little NFT sort of game things where it's not just a game, but it's also an, it's a fundraising opportunity. 100% of the sales of our NFTs go towards the next season's matching pool. So you can donate to the matching pool and you get a little something in return for that. It's a little NFT. And we tried to sort of make it a little bit, you know, in season one, one of the big challenges was this is a completely foreign concept to most of our community, this Pomelo thing. So we use this NFT series as sort of a way to educate people about what quadratic funding is and what are the different elements. And it was a, you know, you get some seeds and some soil and there was a sun and there was water, and each of these kind of represented different elements of kind of the community creating. And we would build a tree and the tree was creating pomelos, and you can take the pomelos and combine them and get golden pomelos. It was this sort of fun little game that we were A, leveraging the cool NFT technology that we have in the Antelope community with blending and mining and stuff like that. And at the same time, educating on engaging our community, and at the same time, raising some funds for the matching pool. And that's how it started. And it's kind of evolved, and we continue doing this every season. Now we're on our fifth season. And went from planting trees and harvesting pomelos to building rocket ships to go to the moon and then building a moon base. That's what we did in season five, when now we're on the moon and we built a moon base. And now in season five, we took it up a little more around the lore around this. So now, you know, there's a story, you know, what the heck's going on the moon? There's some strange artifact that we discovered on the moon that contains some knowledge of some species that exists out in the outer reaches of the galaxies called the Pomelians. And yeah. And
are they friendly?
I hope so. It's kind of, we'll have to find out. But the good news is in this artifact we found, there's also some knowledge of technology that might help us answer that question. Some new technology that we can start applying to building a new form of spaceship that's capable of traveling the outer reaches of space. And maybe we can go and find these Pomelians one day. We don't know yet. We'll find out.
Are you saying the aliens are incepting us through technology via, like, encoded in NFTs? On EOS, is that what I'm?
That's what it seems like. We still have some more investigation to do. I think again, we haven't crafted these spaceships yet.
We need to
do that and go in and let's see if they even work. I don't know. There is some minor utility to these too. So the other cool fun thing about these NFTs is you can set them as your profile picture in Pomelo. You can set them as your banner image on your profile page. It adds a bit of reputation too. The one thing I noticed, which I was unexpected to me, it was just something that happened. When I look at like the list, you know, you can browse grants on Pomelo and there's a section that shows you all of the donors on that grant. And it shows the profile pictures. And when I look at a grant that, for example, was disqualified for heavy Sybil attack compared to a grant that was like legit, had widespread community support, you see it's like all these anonymous gray Pomelo profile pictures on the grant that had lots of Sybil, and you see lots of NFT profile pictures on the grants that had true community support. So we don't currently, and maybe we will and decide this, there's no like trust bonus for people who have an NFT profile picture, but it is a bit of a signal to donors that, you know, for example, a grant that maybe has an NFT profile picture make you more trustworthy, or just looking at their donors saying, oh, okay, this is actually a grant that has true community support, I'm maybe more likely to donate to those grants than I am to donate to the grants that have a bunch of anonymous donors.
Is there a connection between the POP tokens, the proof of participation tokens that are handed out, say, for instance, for attending fireside chats and other doing other things in the community, and anything happening with this stuff you got going on in Pomelo? Was there a crossover there, or is still?
There's not currently, not that I'm aware of, but there could be. And there could also be, yeah, there's all kinds of opportunities to expand. So we've been tossing around, you know, for example, how can we, so in addition to our own NFTs being supported as a profile picture, there are certain collections also outside of Pomelo that we support as profile pictures. So kind of, which is kind of one of the cool things about Web3. It's like, you can take your valuable piece of property and use it anywhere that allows you to.
Sure.
So, you know, for example, the Boyd avatars are something that we support and Pomelo as profile pictures. As we expand our matching partners, maybe they have NFT collections that they'd like to see supported in Pomelo. That's a one potential cross-chain NFT thing maybe we'll see at some point. Maybe not immediately, but something we've been noodling around with. And if you join this latest Fireside Chat, you might have heard a bit of alpha about cross-chain even beyond Antelope that we're starting to explore. Yeah, exactly. So if you're a fan of Bitcoin, and if you've heard of, there's Bitcoin Ordinals is the kind of the latest hot, and you know, people are now minting NFTs directly on Bitcoin. And the team is putting together doing some work now. And another thing I didn't mention about our NFT series is if you complete the NFT adventure, you know, you make it all the way to blending your final moon base or spaceship, you receive a Pomelo astronaut NFT. And we've got 1,000 unique Pomelo astronauts. And you can set those as your profile pictures too. Or we're going to be sending one of our fancy new technology rockets outside of the Antelope ecosystem into the Bitcoin universe.
Oh my gosh.
Or we'll be giving, hopefully, the community opportunity to top on this rocket with us, send an astronaut or two to the Bitcoin ecosystem.
Wow.
And explore that. Let's see what happens to astronauts that go to Bitcoin. We don't know yet. It's a whole other universe that we haven't yet explored. So, you know, enter at your own risk.
What stories they might have if they return from this voyage? That's what I want to know.
Okay, who knows?
Cool.
Who knows?
That's some serious stuff right there. So I guess by the sound of it, it sounds like you're pretty bullish on NFTs on EOS in the Antelope ecosystem altogether. Would you say that's true? Any other features?
Yeah, and
on NFTs?
So like we love the technology that, you know, now we've got a great NFT standard available with the Atomic assets. There's a lot that we can do with, you know, it's very flexible, a lot we can do with it, you know, so, you know, a lot of the mechanics that we built for Pomelo would not have been possible on other blockchains because of the fees and a lot, you know, things like blending and harvesting and all these things that actually would, in another blockchain, every time you do that, there would be a large fee and it would kind of take the fun out of it all and no one would participate. So, you know, we love EOS NFTs in particular for that reason. We, you know, collectibles have always been a thing. You know, it's the way that I look at NFTs is it's sort of like it kind of goes back to reputation again. It's like, why do you buy the rookie card, the Wayne Gretzky rookie card, for thousands of dollars.
Right.
Is it because you like that picture a lot? Or is it because you want to show your friends, look, I have the Wayne Gretzky rookie card?
Yeah.
It's a bit of like a flex reputation thing.
Hmm.
And so we that's sort of how we treat it in Pomelo. It's like, you know, why do you get a Pomelo NFT? As well as because you want to show your community that you helped raise funds for the matching pool on it, and you participated in this adventure, and you're engaged in the ecosystem. Look, I got the number 2 mint of this astronaut. I was there when Pomelo was being, you know, in the infancy of Pomelo. I got another thing that we're doing is the achievement badges. So those are also NFTs.
Hmm.
You know, if you're a top donor or a top grant creator, you've donated, you know, you're in the top 100 donors in terms of that you donated, or I think it's the top 50 grant owners that we reward with achievement badges. Another thing you can flex on your Pomelo profile. We airdrop these achievement badges to the donors, and something new, actually, we're now this season going to be also doing the top collection achievements. And if you browse the collections, you can see these achievements kind of highlighted on the collector's collection as a signal of their reputation.
Cool. I just wanted to quickly touch on the trust bonus, because I feel like it's come up a few times, but we haven't really directly addressed the trust bonus. And maybe you could just talk a little bit about that. And I don't know how NFTs or the badges all feed into the trust bonus, or if they don't. But say a few words about that, if you would.
Yeah. There's a whole ball of wax we can get into with the whole... So with quadratic funding, the fact that there's a strong benefit to the grants that have many unique donors, it creates an incentive for bad actors to fake many unique donors, create lots of accounts, donate with all of them to myself. And that's, you know, one way of boosting the potential matching allocation that you receive.
Sure.
And there's multiple ways that we defend against that. One of the ways is with the trust bonus. And what the trust bonus does is gives donors or anyone an opportunity to kind of boost the likelihood of their uniqueness by linking multiple different social accounts, their self, you know, SMS. You can link multiple socials. You can link with your SMS. We have this is actually a Pomelo project called Port, where you can, if you've got a phone with an NFC chip and a passport that supports the NFC chips, most passports do, at least the more modern ones, you tap your passport and you can, without exposing any personal information besides the country, you can prove that you have a unique passport, and again, boost your trust bonus. And what the trust bonus does is essentially just amplifies the value of the donation that you made. So let's say I donated 1 EOS to the grant and I have a 200% trust bonus. We count that as a 2 EOS donation, and it enhances the, you know, so you get a bigger value going to the grant that you're donating to. And the idea is the more people that we have with high trust bonuses, the more it dilutes the people who don't have high trust bonuses. And it's much more difficult for someone who's doing a Sybil attack, which is that creating 100 different accounts, for each of those 100 accounts to also have unique set of all these trust bonuses, because our trust bonus checks that you can't use the same passport on 2 accounts, for example. You can't use the same social account on 2 accounts.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of it raises the barrier of attack on Sybil attackers, diminishes the impact of their attack, and increases the impact of those who are able to, you know, provide that evidence of uniqueness. So that's the trust bonus. If you like, I could talk about some of the other ways we defend against Sybil too. because that's just, that's the sort of preventative measure. We also have the other preventative measure is that it's just better strategy long-term as a grant owner to play by the rules.
Right. Yeah.
Because if you get caught breaking the rules, you get disqualified. If you get caught more than once, you get banned.
Mm.
And now you've tarnished your reputation in the community. Again, reduce the odds. A lot of the, you know, we talk again about the grant framework and things like that at the beginning of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. You know, something I try to get across to participants is like, and the real value of participating in Pomelo is not the funds you earn in this current season. It's potential future funds you can earn in future seasons. And then even more so, that reputation that you build, which opens doors for you to get even more funding from things like the grant framework, or maybe some VC comes along and wants to fund your project because you've, again, built a good little MVP and built the reputation. So if you're only in it for the short term, small funds I can get this one season, you're really passing up on this much larger opportunity and playing by the rules, showing up every season, demonstrating the progress you're making, and then really getting a big prize at the end of that. And again, we do an analysis after every donation period ends. And again, getting reports from the community and doing our own on-chain analysis. So we built a tool called EOS Detective, which we can kind of track and see patterns of where did the tokens come from that donor. And sometimes, you know, we've disqualified grants where we can see very clearly that the grant owner took funds and distributed it to all these different individual accounts, and all of those individual accounts then donated to the project. And that's an easy, you know, an easy thing for us to identify, take action on, and not match those donations. And then again, you've now been flagged on our analysis report, and you've burned your reputation a little bit there.
Yeah, EOSDetective.io, I believe it's a really cool tool.
Yeah.
Briefly, I know it's probably kind of a long story, but what was the origin of EOS Detective? I was never quite sure how that all came about.
Yeah, it's a bit of a science experiment, but also like, you know, there was a real business there that we were serving. So what EOS Detective is like a, you know, if you're familiar with chain analysis, is a way for you to visualize the path of token transfers, and you can analyze, you know, and expand. You can see, you know, okay, start with one account and then expand, see all of the accounts that account has sent tokens to, and how, you know, the velocity of those token transfers with arrows pointing. You can kind of build this sort of map of the travel of tokens. Hmm. So partially it was a, wow, isn't this cool? The ledger is public. And we can, you know, we've got this blockchain where you can see all the token transfers, but there's no easy way to digest it in terms of, unless you're like reading through a Block Explorer account by account and trying to like create this mental map in your head of who is interacting with who. So what EOS Detective does is sort of allows you to create that map for you without having to read through all the Block Explorers. And at the same time, through that process of building it, we identified, for example, oh, these accounts are exchanges.
Mm.
These accounts are DeFi apps. These accounts are gambling apps.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And the work that we did building, like, we had to build models to be able to analyze all these token transfers and you know, store them in a way that we can query them and expose the information. And it was, for a while we had some, you know, it's a UI that you can view, but there's also an API that there was a token sale that was happening in the early days of EOS where they've used our API to determine a, you know, they created a score for everybody who was participating in a token sale. And for regulatory reasons, they wanted to prevent, you know, for example, and because we had this, you know, for example, if someone who, a large percentage of a person's balance came from gambling apps, they were not interested in having that person participate in the token sale. And with EOS Detected, we could give them a score and that sort of thing. Currently, EOS Detective is at this time really just being used by the Pomelo team for our Sybil analysis. But we hope to expand it and start making it more multi-chain. Right now, it's available on EOS and Wax. We see the Wax community actually use it quite heavily to help with identifying like wash trading of NFTs. And we actually get like quite a lot of usage on the Wax network, people using EOS Detective to say, hey, wait a second, this NFT collection and just all purchased by the NFT, the person who created that project to pump the price. And that's something that people have been using Detective to detect.
Cool. I was always curious about the backstory there. It kind of came up, and then, you know, I've played around with it. It's really fun. If anyone wants to just go to eosdetective.io, you can put in any EOS account address and kind of see, put in your own and see what you're connected to, where your tokens are flowing to and from. It's very, very fun visualization. Is there a command line way to access EOS Detective 2? Is there more like a different, deeper dive into it, or is it pretty, like, is there an API or how does...
There is. I don't think our APIs are public at this point. So right now, the only way to interact with it is through the UI.
Cool.
But something we're planning on continuing to. So we haven't done much work to Detective since we first launched it many years ago. Time flies.
It's been
at least a few years, probably more.
Well, I'm glad it's been really instrumental.
Key for Pomelo, and now we're using it more and more. So as a result, we do intend to do... So something else that we've been doing a lot of work on with Pinax is working with Firehose and Substreams, which is sort of this new data stack for being able to process blockchain data in a very efficient, composable, parallel way. And the team has been building Firehose and Antelope Firehoses and Substreams.
And okay, so back up. What is Pinax and what it, I'm like, bring us into this. This is a whole other category.
Cool.
And you kind of alluded to it in EOS Detective with some of the history needs, I think, of EOS Detective. But maybe you could back up and give us some context. We got into this in our previous podcast ages ago now, it feels like. And we don't need to go super deep into this, but it is really interesting, and I do want to know more. So,
So Pinax is. I'll take a little step back about it. Part of the EOS Nation history was we were if you're familiar with Diffuse, which is a kind of this history solution that many apps are leveraging on the EOS ecosystem. That was built by EOS Canada at the time, and they built this great technology. So they needed to make this technology great, better than any other blockchain history solution that existed out there, because of how much volume the EOS network was experiencing. It was like EOS, fastest blockchain out there, all these transactions happening, and they needed. And for those who know, a blockchain is all public data, but it's not organized in any way that you can make sense of it. If you want to, like, for example, build an app that displays real-time relevant data to your users,
right?
You need a history solution, and you need a history solution that can, if you want to have your data that's actually the reality of current situation. It needs to be able to keep up with the rate of the transactions on the network. So the EOS Canada team built this solution called Diffuse that was able to do that. And since then, other blockchains have begun, you know, Binance Smart Chain, for example, or PancakeSwap was having an issue where the history solutions that were built for Ethereum weren't able to keep up with the rate of transactions happening on PancakeSwap. And the EOS Canada team behind Diffuse was like, we have some technology that can keep up. And they did a little prototype and they demonstrated that their solution could keep up with what nothing else could keep up with out there. And through that, they ended up getting a large grant from the Graph Foundation, the Graph ecosystem. So the Graph is this decentralized blockchain data indexing solution out there that's sort of become the industry standard out there. And a lot of the data aggregators out there get their data from the Graph. And EOS Canada Diffuse got this grant to now come and bring your technology over to the Graph ecosystem and sort of rebuild their stack using back the core technology they that powered Diffuse. So that's what they did. In the middle there, we were the only other team that was operating Diffuse. So they built this technology, Diffuse. We are a team that's very strong at operating robust, high available, fast infrastructure. We're offering the community edition of Diffuse for the EOS community. And when the team behind Diffuse went to the Graph ecosystem, they stopped participating in the EOS ecosystem. And we basically took over that the role of being now the only team running Diffuse for the Antelope ecosystem.
Right.
And now what's happening is they've kind of built in this, like, you can almost consider it Diffuse 2.0, which is a much more modular, parallelized, you know, right? Diffuse is kind of this big monolith that's like you got to save all the history or none of it. And it's very heavy and hard to run. They've now sort of componentized it into these different pieces, firehose, substreams, and then you've got indexes. And they've been building that stack for the Graph ecosystem, but it's essentially identical to the Graph, to Diffuse, in terms of the underlying technology stack. So our team has become very familiar with that. We got invited to now come help operate this stuff within the Graph ecosystem, because the Diffuse team, now the Streaming Fast team, they're really focused on building the technology, the code. They're less interested in operating it. We're pros at operating it. So we're kind of there running this ecosystem. And at the same time, it's like, wow, Diffuse was already built for Antelope. We're very familiar with it, and we've been porting all of the new stuff they're building for the Graph ecosystem. We've been now porting back over to the Antelope ecosystem and going back to Detective. Wow, this is a great technology stack that could power the next generation of EOS Detective, because the EOS Detective that is now in existence, it's like kind of held together with spit and tape, and they can't really handle that much more load because it's built on this much less robust data processing solution. So what we're looking forward to is, okay, we've now built Firehose for Antelope. We're building substreams for Antelope. Now let's start building the little components that can eventually replace Detective with this much more robust, scalable solution. And because it's more scalable, now we can start offering it more broadly to more Antelope chains and support more users overall as more adoption comes.
That's a lot. You guys are doing a lot.
We are.
Pioneering history. You got the NFTs. You got the quadratic funding covered. I mean, what else? What else are you going to do? Is there some other avenue you're gonna launch into and just take us all by surprise?
For now, I think we've got enough on our plates. I think we're if anything, we want to tighten things up a little more. But yeah, Pomelo and the things we're doing with history and Pinx are like, and being a block producer, those are kind of the key pillars that we're focused on. And we're excited to keep growing those. And again, big fans of the concept of a multi-chain future. So, one of our goals with the work we're doing is like, we'd love to see EOS supported on the graph. And a lot of the work that we're doing is going to help make that easier because we're building, putting, Firehose and Substreams being the base layer of the stack of the graph. If we're building those building blocks on EOS, if at some point the EOS does become available on the graph, that infrastructure is already there to power it. And at the same time, we're there advocating for it. We kind of consider a bit of a Trojan horse strategy. So The reason we created the Pinx brand was because we knew, and this is when we started doing this, was before EOS was started making, EOS hadn't quite started recovering its reputation. And you say the word EOS to somebody in the Ethereum ecosystem, and it's like, get away. So we couldn't go in there as EOS Nation. So we created Pinx as our sort of chain agnostic data operations company. But at the end of the day, it's the same team. It's the EOS Nation team behind all of this. And what we hope to, and what we are doing is we've actually made quite a bit of a name for ourselves as Pinx in the graph ecosystem. We're growing, speaking of a reputation, we've been growing our reputation there. And hopefully, at some point, we'll have a strong enough reputation that we can bring EOS along and get that connected into the graph ecosystem.
Awesome. Great strategy. I approve 100%. You always deliver the public goods. You know what I mean? You always...
That's the idea.
You got us covered. It's great. Wow, I feel like we covered more territory than I ever imagined we were going to cover, and I'm really glad that you're able to carve out an hour and a half of time today at least, and then some. So let's do it again sometime. I don't know what's our cadence these days. Every 6 months or so, we come back around.
Yeah,
and
happy to. Anytime, let me know. I'm always happy to chat.
So yeah, it's been a pleasure to have you. Are there any, we'll include the links in the show notes. Is there any call to action you want to give for folks?
Well, as you said, sounds like when this gets published, there's going to be still some time left to donate. So I definitely encourage you all to, if it's not too late, make some donations in season 5. If it is, come hang out in season 6. There's always another opportunity to participate in every quarter we do it. If you haven't experienced being a grant owner yet, that's another call to action. Again, it's too late for season 5, but come out for season 6. Don't be overwhelmed, but consider it a foot in the door. Your first grant, it may not be successful, and that's fine. The idea is starting slowly to build that reputation, getting feedback from the community, and you might not earn a ton of money in your first crack at the bat, but now your second time you come back, you have a higher chance of getting more. So treat your first time as a grant owner that way. Don't put too much pressure on yourself that, I'm not good enough, I can't compete with those other big names that I recognize out there. That's not the idea for your first season. Your first season is all about just getting your foot wet, learning the process, starting to build that reputation.
Some say that reputation is the only real currency. I mean, without that, what else can you do? What else can you access for long? You know, not for long
anymore. And it's really hard to build a reputation, but it's easy to burn it. So yeah, again, another call to action. If you're someone who's thinking of milking the Pomelo matching pool by manipulating the system and cheating, think about that reputation that you have at stake.
Think about how good they are at building the next generation of EOS detective, and just, you know, probably not going to work out. So play the long game, play the good high reputation game. There's a lot we're going to do. We're a lot of cool stuff coming EOS in the multi-chain Antelope world. So yeah, definitely worth playing the long game here. Daniel, it's been total pleasure to have you. Please, anyone that's watching, if you made it this far, you're a total champion. I encourage you to participate in Pomelo in whatever way you're able to. And of course, hit that like button, subscribe. We'll do it again next time, and we'll see you then. All the best.
Thanks, Ryan. Take care, everyone.
Cheers.